do you feel connected to the natural world, to species other than ourselves, to their future, to the future of the planet? What about your kids? How do you help them connect with the planet's future? You know, we try and do our bit, we recycle, we take the bus, but there's a much deeper connection, a deeper motivation that we need to engender here. My next guest had something of what he calls an eco-epiphany. It happened after an expedition in Antarctica. That surreal icy landscape is the place for epiphanies, I reckon. I was just thinking the other day whether I'll ever get there in my lifetime. It really got me thinking, maybe I should. How do I make that happen? Anyway, last year's Victorian Environmental Educator of the Year, photographer and writer Jason Kimberley was the chap who kick-started what's called Cool Australia, which started with Antarctica. He's going to tell us about that now. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Good morning, Natasha. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. You're a bar manager in a past life, then a photographer. I think your family run a big clothing enterprise. Take us to Antarctica then. Why did it have such an impact?
Sure, it was a place I'd always wanted to go, I suppose. As a kid, I always wondered, how could you possibly stand on the bottom of the world and not fall off? And I always had this feeling that I had to go there and see for myself. So I'd always had that sort of nagging thing in the back of my mind. And then a mate of mine who I'd been done a few adventures with over the years, a chap by the name of Peter Hillary, who'd been down there several times, said, come on, let's go and climb Mount Vinson. And I said, oh, geez, that sort of sounds interesting. But I really wanted to take an old school buddy of mine with me, Mr. Jason Veal. I said, listen, he's not big on hills. How about we do an old-fashioned trek and just load up the sled and put on our backpacks and just take off somewhere?
How many people do that who aren't scientists?
Jolly good. Not too many, as far as I know. There's the odd expedition. People retrace, you know, certain routes and find new routes to the pole and that sort of thing. But we just sort of hitched a ride on a Russian charter jet with a whole heap of scientists going down to Antarctica and took off down this, hostile little valley on the edge of the Ellsworth Ranges at 80 degrees south and spent 2.5 weeks down there. The only living things we saw were each other, the three of us. Nothing lives at 80 degrees. Lichen won't even grow on rocks. And, the sun didn't set and it was an incredible experience.
Unreal. Not another animal, and yet this has sort of motivated you on behalf of the world's animals. I mean, what was it about that landscape? What was it about that landscape, that setting, that kind of triggered something quite deep in you, it seems?
Yeah, well, it was certainly down there, and it was also, I think, part, when you're wandering around there and you've been going for 10 hours and it's, you know, minus 35, and the second you stop, you've got to put on all your warm gear before you think about doing anything else. And you know, your mind wanders and you think about all the different places and you look at this beautiful, pristine environment that you're in. And when you sort of think of Antarctica, oh, it's all sort of ice and snow and, you know, not much to see there. But it's one of those sort of things, the more time you spend there and appreciate the nuances and just, you know, the strength of the breeze and the different formations of the ice and the snow, you really sort of have a new appreciation of these things. Then I went back to my trusty garage and was writing a book about our adventures down there, and it was, I suppose, really the research I was doing to find out what was happening environmentally in the Southern Ocean and around Antarctica that really gave me a bit of a jolt and thought, you know, we need to know more about this, and then we need to take some action.
Well, it was particularly the story of krill in the Southern Ocean that was a trigger too, wasn't it? And where krill happens to end up, kind of the most bizarre place, in fact.
It was. I was reading about the fishermen coming down to the Southern Ocean and netting krill by the boatload, taking it back and using it as an additive in pellets that were used to feed cattle that were grazing on cleared Amazonian rainforest to make hamburgers to sell to the Americans, who, one could argue, like Australians, probably don't need another hamburger. And I thought, geez, this is just so bizarre and wrong on every level. But because it's unregulated, because people are making a quid out of it at every step of the way, it goes on. So I thought, what else is going on? As it turns out, there's hundreds of things like this that are going on around the world, and the impacts that we have, because it's out of sight and, you know, out of mind, whether it's overfishing or the Pacific garbage patch or the destruction of forests or pollution of rivers or pollution of our atmosphere, we just don't sort of stop and think about these things. I thought, geez, I thought I knew, and I thought, well, if I don't know, who else doesn't know? So I asked around. It turns out no one's got a clue. So I thought, well, If we don't do something about this, we're going to, you know, slowly go down the gurgler before we know it.
They do have a clue, though. I mean, people do have a clue because we hear this stuff. We hear it, we're told to care. And this is what's really spurred you to create this website, Cool Australia, which is actually a vehicle for education, and you've managed to kind of sneak into the curriculum. I think that's an amazing feat. But, I mean, you know, sustainability is a catchphrase that people now yawn at. They glaze over.
It's a shocking word. It's a long, tricky word. Why couldn't it be bush or cash or go or something like
that? Yeah, exactly.
You know, whoever came up with that, you know, shame on them. But, I mean, it is a long word, and your eyes do sort of gloss over. But it's about taking responsibility, Natasha, and for everything we do. I talk to school kids all the time. I say, what do your parents, you know, get on your back about? And they say, take responsibility, clean up your room. I go, exactly right. We need to think of our planet as our room and take some responsibility. Because sustainability is everyone's responsibility. It's not a handful of greenies here and there or someone with a social conscience. Everyone needs to make an effort if we're going to do a good job and get the planet back onto an even keel.
Well, it's finding the meaning in that word, though, and so that's been your kind of mission central since, it seems. I mean, there are so many websites. There's a jam-packed school curriculum, you know. Why yet another web resource for kids and schools?
Well, it's an excellent question. And look, I came back from the trip to Antarctica, wrote the book Antarctica, A Different Adventure, and I thought once this is done, I really want to have a crack at what we might be able to do with, educating people about what's going on. And there's, as you say, no shortage of information, a lot of boring, dry science speak. You know, if I hear the word anthropogenic, I'll strangle someone.
Oh, I don't think science is boring at all. This is the foundation of this whole conversation.
I agree, but it's the way it's presented and the words that are used, and it turns a lot of people off, as you said, that eyes rolling over and the glazed look.
Do that at the word sustainability. I never do that about science. But your focus is on really trying to bring these issues alive, but in the context of the formal curriculum.
That's right, yeah. So, look, it is a challenge, and what we do is, look, we speak in plain English, and when I say science, I really mean that sort of that dry science speak that a lot of people have trouble with. So what we do is incorporate understandings about biodiversity or energy or water or waste into a maths lesson or an English lesson or a history lesson or an arts lesson. So things that kids need to be taught. There's certain things in the curriculum that are points that teachers need to be hit. But what we say is, hey, fantastic, but let's... While you're doing that, let's have a real-world understanding about the impacts of deforestation or farming on grasslands compared to woodlands, compared to rainforests. How do these things recover? What's the mathematical formulas about this?
That's how you get into a maths class, because I must say brings maths alive too. But give us an example then of some of the ways you kind of have managed to entwine it with the formal curriculum.
Yeah, well, for example, that Year 8 maths teacher who goes, well, what the heck's this got to do with me? Well, we can now say, I'm glad you asked. So you can go to our website and go Year 8 Maths, and Dan will drop a dozen activities that speak to students at the Year 8 Maths level about what they need to know, but through an understanding about biodiversity. We've got a activity there about the Greenland ice cap. Now, the Greenland ice cap, if it were to melt, it's going to take several hundred years, but there's calculations about if temperatures rise by a certain amount and how much this would impact over the course of years, months, weeks, and what the impact might have on sea levels and islands and this around the around our planet. So, you know, the kids can go through there some to go, okay, well, if this does happen, I can see the real impacts of what it might have. So we try and, incorporate, as I say, these real-life understandings into, everyday subjects, which can sometimes, need a little bit of real-world interactivity and connectivity.
I wanted to let people know who I'm talking to. Jason Kimberley is the founder of Cool Australia. It's an online environmental education program. He won Victorian Environmental Educator of the Year last year for his work. So, you know, that point you're making about integrating with this with a curriculum, kids can have this knowledge. You have three small children yourself, I gather.
I do, yes. One of them said to me this morning, what are you going to say, Dad? And I said, I want to talk about, Cool Australia. She said, tell everyone to take responsibility. It's everyone's job.
Oh, they're on message, aren't they? Wheel them out. but the thing is, kids can kind of absorb all this information. Little kids take it all on, learn the language, and then they actually can feel quite overwhelmed and actually quite powerless to do anything about it, because the world is a very big place.
Yeah, look, it certainly is. But look, I'd have to disagree with you about the overwhelmed. We have a real focus on not overwhelming kids in the in our curriculum materials. We really give them bite-sized bits that are readily understood at their age. Everything's year-level specific that we do. So obviously there's more complicated and challenging concepts
but
for
just
students
the information,
in year 9 and
10. Not even the concepts, but just the information that you're telling them about the kind of future destruction, the apocalypse that's about to land.
Well, I suppose we've had a lot of the destruction. It's really about business as usual. Do we keep on going? Do we continue to destroy, or do we learn to change? And we've got the opportunity now to learn to change. So our program we've had evaluated by the Australian Council for Education Research, and we embedded it into 10 schools 2 years ago. And the key takeouts for the findings were that teachers felt more confident teaching, dare I say it, sustainability, and felt they were better teachers as a result. But importantly, the students, both at home and at school, the teachers noticed demonstrable behaviour change around water, waste and energy. And I mean, that really is the pinnacle of any education. So we know what we do works. We know students are interested, and we're really about giving them the means to take action. It starts with action at home. It starts with action at school. So if you can get, even if you have a rubbish-free school ground, or you can recycle or everything you've got in the school ground, if you're starting up a compost, if you're doing these things at school, where you can see the impacts that you can actually do something. You know, no one is too small to have an impact.
Yes, that's interesting. And you run Enviro Week as well, a special week which presents specific challenges to kids to do during that week. And you've had some big name ambassadors get on board since 2009, people like Pat Rafter and Jesse Watson and Magda Zabansky. But even then, I wonder whether you need to also cultivate, right from an early age, political literacy in children, because these are political issues, and you can turn off your lights and you can, you know, walk and ride your bike and catch the bus and advocate for public transport, but it's actually the political action that's really going to make a difference with this next generation.
Yeah, look, I agree. And in Australia, unfortunately, because of some political opportunism, we've made this a political issue. In Europe and the UK, it's not a political issue. Through most of Asia, it's not. It seems to be Australia and the US, the sort of this frontier mentality still seems to pervade, where we feel we have to impact ourselves on nature rather than work with it. We feel the need to dominate it still. So that's something we need to work through, no doubt. But we can look to the rest of the world for examples of where we can do better. And Australia is so well placed to be the leaders in renewable energy. We've got if you look at Australia in a solar map, it's like a red throbbing pimple, brightest spot in the whole world, and we don't utilise it as well as we should. But having said that, we've just hit our millionth solar panel on households, up from less than 5,000 10 years ago. So people are, you know, taking action. We can't always wait for political parties. People are getting out there and making their own decisions. And, you know, I'm not hanging around waiting for a politician to give me a tick. I'm, you know, we're getting in there, Cool Australia, and helping teachers, because the last thing a teacher needs is another job. So we're making teachers' jobs easier. When we run workshops, the feedback we get is, I've just learned in 30 minutes what would have taken me 40 hours of research. So everyone knows the teachers. So anyone out there who knows a teacher, tell them to jump on to coolaustralia.org, have a look and get a better understanding of the world around us.
We'll link to that on the Life Matters website. A generation of solutionaries is what you're after. Just really briefly and finally, what's your next adventure? Antarctica one day?
Well, my missus likes to remind me of my next great adventures at home with our kids.
Raising three children.
I'm working on that. I did sneak off to the Himalayas with a couple of buddies in 2010, and we hiked up to Everest Base Camp and had a brilliant 3 weeks over there. So I try and squeeze something in every couple of years.
I love that, squeezing in a trip to the Himalayas. Hey, thank you very much for joining us this morning, Jason. Appreciate it.
Natasha, thank you so much for having me.
Jason Kimberley there. He is the founder of Cool Australia, an online environmental education program for schools. We will put more information on the Life Matters website. But first, I want to come to Michael Cathcart this morning. A wide and vast spread on the show for books and arts today.
It's fantastic this morning, as always. Now, look, listener, do this. Go on to a web search, look for Eric Whiteacre and sleep, and you'll find the most glorious event. It's Eric Whiteacre conducting singers all over the world who've logged onto YouTube, and he's compiled it into this virtual choir. It's the most most ethereal sound, and we'll talk to him on the show. It's beautiful.
I think I've seen something by him before, and it is absolutely stunning. Thanks very much, Michael.
No worries.
And, well, looking forward to your company. Next on Life Matters, we're looking at the drive-in, drive-out culture and impact on people who do that kind of work in Australia. Coming up to the news, 10 a.m.